Good morning, Hill City. My name is Lacey, and I am part of the team here. And I'm excited to be here for week two of our Stronger series. This is a series where we focus on relationships and what it takes to build strong relationships. I love this series because I really love people. I love watching the way we interact with each other. I just love people watching in general. And over the past couple years, I have started to learn a lot and kind of become obsessed with learning about how we're wired, how we do relationships, how our different personalities are made and interact with each other. I've learned a lot about self-awareness and emotional health, and all of these things have been really, really useful tools. So yes to all of that. It is so helpful, and we should stay curious about ourselves. But today we're going to talk about another layer of understanding that goes beyond just a self-awareness. We're going to talk about a soul awareness. So last week, Nicole Eunice was here and delivered a message where she talked about this higher love that we are called to. And how that informs our relationships. So this week we're going to look at the state of our souls, because my guess is there's a lot of work for us to do there so that that higher love that we are called to is what actually flows out of them. So first we're going to talk about what is a soul. Now this is not a word that we hear all the time in our kind of normal vernacular. We hear about self a lot, myself, yourself, be yourself, believe in yourself. That kind of language is everywhere, but we don't hear people talking about souls all the time. And kind of in the back of my mind, I've always known that like this is an important thing and I should know what it is. You see it in scripture a lot with verses like, as the deer pants for the water, so my soul longs after you. Or what good is it if a man gains a whole world but loses his own soul? And so there is this understanding that it's important, but it does seem like this pretty vague concept. And so if you had asked me a couple years ago, like, all right, well, what is a soul? I don't know that I would have had a solid answer that I could really articulate to you. And the best I could really come up with would be it's this kind of ghost-like part of us that floats up to heaven when we die. And that just sounds kind of odd. And so I was really excited when I learned this way of understanding kind of the innermost parts of us and our soul. So I'm going to share that with you. This comes from the book Soul Keeping by John Ortberg. And actually, he learned it from his mentor, Dallas Willard. So we're going to look at the different parts of our inner lives. And we could focus a lot on what each of these parts are. But I'm just going to give you this visual, and then we're going to talk about the outermost circle that I'm going to draw. Okay, so this first circle that I'm drawing here, this is your will. Your will is your capacity to choose. It is what makes you a person and not a thing. Your will can help you make like these big life choices, but it's really limited in its ability. Your will cannot override habits very well. So you cannot create a healthy soul just by your own willpower. Now, this next circle is your mind. And what I mean by your mind is not just your thoughts, but your feelings. Your mind is like your conscious life. It's where your habits kind of come from. It's where your memories and values are. So it's all of those things that happen consciously up here in your mind. Then our next circle we have is our body. So our body, this is kind of our little kingdom where our will and our mind, they get to be in charge. We have different appetites and habits that come out through our body. Then we have relationships. This is a long one. And so relationships, these are integral in our lives. And yes, we're talking about our internal world, but we internalize the relationships in our life. So then this final outer circle, this is your soul. So your soul is what integrates all of these different things together and aligns them to make one whole life, to make one whole you. So when your soul is healthy, then all of those different parts of you, your will, your mind, your body, your relationships, those are all in alignment, working together and in connection with God. Your soul is what is holding it all together. And it even makes sense because when things are not right, when they're off in someone's life, people often say, my life is falling apart, or I need to get myself together. And that is an indicator that your soul might be out of alignment. Your soul is the deepest part of you, but it's also all of you. And I was thinking about these two different versions of dining experiences that I have had multiple times. And I feel like they're a great picture of what it looks like and can feel like to have a soul either in or out of alignment. So the first one is, imagine, and again, this has happened many times, so it's a collection of stories from my life, but it's a weekday and it's almost dinner time. I'm typically the one in charge of figuring out what dinner is like for our family. There are no groceries in the house and we have somewhere to be that evening. So, and everyone starts asking me, what's for dinner? What's for dinner? What's for dinner? And I don't know. So the only solution is to throw everybody in the car really quickly. You're rushing out the door. At stoplights, I'm ordering on the Chick-fil-A app. People are maybe a little grumpy in the back seat, and then we're kind of speeding there. We get there. God bless Chick-fil-A. They bring out your food to you when you arrive, but then it's like handing out dinners in the back seat, trying to figure out how kids can do ketchup with their fries, all that, and then shoving my own meal in my mouth so we can get to where we're going. Now, technically, my stomach is full at the end of that experience, but it was not a lovely thing to go through. Now, the other extreme that I have also experienced is you set aside a day to have time and to think through what you want that evening meal to look like. There's lots of planning. There's lots of preparing. There's going to the store to find the best ingredients. And then when it's time to start preparing the meal, several friends come over and you spend hours and hours just cooking and talking and tasting little bits here and there. It takes a long time, but nobody is feeling rushed or in a hurry. And then the meal is ready and it smells amazing. And you go outside and there's a beautifully set table with bistro lights and maybe even candles. And you all sit around this table and you are so thankful for this meal that is in front of you. You spend the next few hours just talking and laughing and telling stories and eating. And at the end of that night, I am so full, but it's not just a stomach full. It is a soul that is full on the deepest level. Now, I actually know some people where when you are in their presence, they give you that same kind of soulful feeling. And there are a handful of them in my life, but the one that came to mind that I'll mention today are Lamar and Marjorie Bannister. They are a couple that come to Hill City and they have been married for decades. They really, really are so in love with each other. They have an amazing family. And when you spend time with them, you just hear story after story about God's faithfulness and all of the adventures that they have had with him. When you hear their stories, you even kind of wonder, like, how many lifetimes have you lived? Because all of this cannot have been experienced by just two people. They have this deep joy about them. They are so humble and unassuming. And that joy that I mentioned, like, you see it in their eyes, and there is like a legit twinkle there in their eyes. They have poured so much into John and I, probably more than they will ever know. But specifically, a few months ago, we were just walking through a really heavy time and we're going through some stuff and just really wanted to spend time with some people that we trusted and talk some things out. And so we reached out to Lamar and Marjorie and they instantly cleared their day for us. We went over, they invited us into their home, and we spent 2 to 3 hours with them. They just let us share and talk. They asked great questions. They'd listened so well. And then they poured out all of this wisdom and they encouraged us and they prayed for us. And we felt like when we were sitting with them that we could just take a deep breath and relax because their presence was so powerful and impactful. And when we left there, we felt way lighter. We also just felt like, man, like we want to be like them when we grow up. And, you know, of course, some of that comes with age, but it doesn't automatically happen just because we happen to get older. It happens with years and years of unseen soul work behind the scene. They have grown such deep roots. And in preparation for this message, I even asked them if they had any thoughts or advice that they would want to share kind of concerning this idea of soul work. And they responded with just the most thoughtful and amazing things. But I'm just going to share a few little nuggets with you that they sent over. They said, "So we believe, as difficult a discipline as it may be initially, some regular system of quiet reading of His word and prayer in order to receive His instructions is the method that He has ordained for millennia. He just wants to talk to us so He can show us His best plan for our daily lives. We may not be able to do this every day, but we must work towards at least most days if we truly seek His desire. For it brings us hope and direction." And one more, "Another simple but profound truth we have discovered: it all takes very hard work and perseverance. And no one likes the hard work it takes. In fact, it takes a reservoir from which to draw in order to find the energy to do so. For us, only His word and instruction through His word and prayer are what motivates us to persevere and do the hard work. And we have recognized through the years that it will never let up, because He's only interested in what it takes to bring us to the next step. And there is always a next step. We can make the choice to stop growing, but that is never His choice or plan. And where we choose to let off on the work is where the trouble lurks. There, the enemy of our souls has developed quite an array of distractions along the way. Even religious ones that seem good, but they will only delay or sideline His plan for us. So back to work. Joy comes in the morning." In Jeremiah, there is this beautiful illustration of a tree planted by water. And so when I think of people like Lamar and Marjorie, and when I reflect on those words that they sent over, this is what I picture. It says, "But blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in Him. They will be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when the heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought and never fails to bear fruit." So this is a picture of what an ordered soul looks like. It's all of the unseen, the work underneath that gives the strength. You see, when we picture this tree that's described, the writer would have been in a desert kind of climate. So it wasn't this lush environment that they were sitting in. And a lot of the vegetation would have had really shallow roots that just depend on the rain for water. But in a season of drought or heat, it all just dries up and blows away. But these trees with deep roots, they do not depend on the external circumstances to flourish. The heat that comes doesn't bother them. The heat is like kind of the regular hard things of life. It's gonna come every year, but this tree is not bothered by that heat. And then the writer mentions the drought. The drought does not cause worry. Those are the bigger things in life that are longer lasting and just harder. But this tree, because its roots are deep, is still able to flourish. The tree is strong and steady and grounded and green and fruit-bearing and giving life and shade to the things around it. And so for me, this is my goal. I want to be so fiercely present and unshakable. I want to be drawing from deep roots and delighting in God's word. I want to be wise and joyful and comfortable in my own skin and have that kind of interior depth that we see here. I want to be able to focus on the person in front of me so well. But that kind of health in a soul requires a really deep spiritual life. So what is keeping us from that? Dallard Willis famously said, "Hurry is the great enemy of spiritual life in our day, and you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life." So, is your soul hurried? We know that busy is an epidemic in our culture. We hear it talked about and referenced all the time. We are all busy. And honestly, when I hear that, sometimes I can get really annoyed by it because as a working mom with three kids, what I can kind of hear when people are talking about that is like, just stop doing the things that you're doing. And I'm like, I can't. There are so many things to do. And then I'm also somebody who really enjoys doing a lot of things. And so I can get annoyed when I hear that busy is bad. Now, but what I have learned and have really been struck by is the difference between busy and hurry. And yes, there is a fine line there for sure, but they are two different things. John Ortberg describes it as being busy is an outward condition, but being hurried is an inner condition, a condition of the soul. It means being so preoccupied with myself and my life that I am unable to be fully present with God, with myself, and with other people. You see, an ordered soul is an unhurried soul. And I'm going to give you a couple ways to help identify this. We're going to see if we have hurry sickness. So this is actually a real life diagnosable thing, hurry sickness, okay? But there's a difference between busy and hurry. So here are some of the distinguishing features. So busy means a full schedule, could be many activities, is physically demanding, but ultimately reminds me I need God. Versus hurried is preoccupied, unable to be fully present, spiritually draining, and causes me to be unavailable to God. In his book, Subversive Spirituality, Paul Jensen talks about how we become hurry sick. And so maybe, I don't know where you are, raise your hand or something if these three things could possibly apply to your life in diagnosing the hurry sickness. So first, there's time pressure. Time pressure is the sense that there just isn't enough time for our tasks. Then there's time urgency. This arises when time pressure becomes a more frequent experience, prompting us to feel the need to hurry or accelerate the rate at which we do things. But then this leads to hurry sickness. This occurs when time urgency has become severe and chronic, changing one's personality and lifestyle. Okay? Have you experienced these things, maybe? If you're still not sure if this is you, here are some of the actual symptoms of hurry sickness. One, do you feel like it takes too long for an elevator door to close? What about microwaving your coffee for 30 seconds? Do you feel the compulsion to need to do something else with that time? What about moving from one checkout counter to the next because you think the line looks shorter or faster? Or when you are counting the cars in front of you to decide which lane to get in or which one is faster moving? You know, for me, those are like real life ones. Okay, for me, some of the indicators in my life are, can I get through a day without telling my kids to hurry up? You can also sometimes tell the state of my soul, this is vulnerability here, folks, by the state of my closet. And it is not always a pretty picture in there. I also can experience like a lack of focus and just a frenzied kind of way and feeling. And then the biggest one for me is that I can tend to have a scarcity mindset when it comes to my time. I have that time pressure where I feel like there just isn't enough to go around. And so when I see that in myself, I can recognize, whoa, my soul needs to slow down. So take the next 30 seconds and answer this question. What is something in your life that you think could be an indicator of a hurried soul for you? Our souls are fatigued. We are always rushing around trying to process and do so much, and our rhythm is not sustainable. Our soul needs a new rhythm. So let's look at the life of Jesus, because that guy was super busy. And he got a lot done, like maybe the most done ever. And he was also never in a hurry. There were outside people and circumstances always pressing in and pressuring him to get in a hurry, but he was unwavering. He was always steady. You see, Jesus had a human body, but he had a divine rhythm. And he's inviting us to follow not only what he taught, which is where we end up focusing a lot of our energy, but he's also inviting us to follow him, the way he lived, his lifestyle, his rhythm. Here's what Jesus said in Matthew 11. Let's read it out together. So wherever you are, if you're at your house by yourself, or if you're at a watch party with a bunch of people, just say these words out loud. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So everybody, just breathe. Okay, now I'm going to read to you the Message version of that. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. What is really cool about this is that when we are tired or burned out, our natural tendency is to want to escape, to completely unplug. We might want like a spa day or a round of golf, or want to just sit and watch Netflix all weekend. But those things are not what replenish us. And so Jesus here is offering us something more sustainable. In this passage, easy isn't describing circumstances. It's describing the state of our souls. I love the way that John Mark Comer puts it in his book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. Jesus doesn't offer us an escape. He offers us equipment. You see, the yoke doesn't eliminate the work, but it makes it easy because he is with us. And when we are yoked to him, we are in step with him and following his rhythm. So, how do we get our souls into that rhythm? We have to look at what Jesus actually did. So I encourage you to even go and read all of the stories of Jesus's life through the lens of his pace and his hurry and the things that he worked into his life and made time for. Because his internal rhythm was not affected by the external hurry that was around him. I kind of imagine it like that Jesus was like a metronome. So if you're a musician, you'll know what I mean. But it's one of those, now they're electronic, but it used to be this little tool that musicians would use. And they can set it for whatever speed they want, but it keeps perfect time. And so they'll set it and just goes. And so as musicians are practicing and playing music, they can play a beautiful song, but always stay on the right rhythm. They even use it when recording. It's like a click track now. So an entire band can be playing the same song. They can be playing different parts, but they are united to that same rhythm, and they're aligned with that so that this beautiful music is created. And so that's how I picture Jesus's life, but it takes practice and it takes discipline for that to be internalized and for that rhythm to be what comes out of us. So if we look at the first part of Jesus's life, he was a Jewish kid growing up in just a normal family and community. And so he would have lived the normal life of a Jewish boy. And there were tons of disciplines that were ingrained in him from an early age. There was always regular prayer and worship and scripture memorization and community. And these habits built up over time. And then as an adult, he didn't just walk away from those. They were still an active part of his life. So this is not an exhaustive list, but it's a great place to start at looking at the rhythms that Jesus had in his life. So I'm going to highlight some of these things that we see that he does. So he woke up early to spend time with God. And sometimes he would even go off by himself for a longer period of time to pray. He rested, like dude loved a good nap. He made time for relationships. He ate long meals with his friends. He created time and space to hang out with kids. He practiced Sabbath every single week. Now, this was a day that included nothing else except for rest and worship and loved ones. So it's very different than how we would imagine just a day off where we're running errands and catching up on household projects and cleaning out our inbox to prepare for the next week. You see, worship, people, play, and rest, these are the things that breathe life into our souls, and these are things that Jesus made time for. Now, you might notice that I didn't say work, and that was on purpose. Work is really important. Jesus worked hard, and we are designed and we are made to do work. But it's only through the healthy rhythms of our soul that work is able to be in its proper place and context in our lives so that it can be life-giving and missional. You see, Jesus was never hurried, and neither is love. And truthfully, I am never at my best when I am hurried because love and hurry are simply incompatible. Even when you think about the spiritual gifts that God is trying to develop in us, it's love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I cannot do any of these things when I'm in a hurry. So choosing to follow Jesus, it is the best choice that you could ever make because when you align your life and your rhythm with his, you are going to experience the fullness that he has promised. And all of those things that I mentioned above, they are the things that will come flowing out of you. You know, the result of having a healthy soul is also not just for your benefit. It's so that you would be a tree that brings life and shade to everything that's around it. It means that you can be a person that is so, so present in the moment and who has margin and who can just roll with interruptions because most of Jesus' ministry was just full of interruptions, but he had margin for that. You can be a person that is able to be fully present and cultivate strong, loving relationships where you are fully loving people. That kind of love has to come from the ultimate source. It is not something that we can accomplish by our own willpower. And so I don't know what season of life you are in right now. You might be in a really awesome place, and that is great. Just keep up the good work because there's always a next step. Our roots can always go deeper. There's always growth to happen. But you also might be someone who is in the heat of summer and just waiting for it to rain. You might be somebody that is going through a drought, and it's been a long time. And it's been really hard. Honestly, a lot of 2020 has probably felt like that. I think a lot of us are just like clenching our fists and our teeth and just trying to power through because there is so much uncertainty and fear and pain, and we don't know when it's going to end. But I can tell you that this is still a season where your soul can flourish, even in the midst of a drought. But growth, it takes time and it takes discipline, but the fruit that comes out of it is so, so worth it. So I'd like to close with this quote from John Mark Comer because it's super convicting. He says, "We read the stories of Jesus, his joy, his resolute peace through uncertainty, his unanxious presence, his relaxed manner, and how in the moment he was, and think, I want that life. We hear his open invite to life to the full and think, sign me up. We hear about his easy yoke and soul deep rest and think, gosh, yes, heck yes, I need that. But then we're not willing to adopt his lifestyle. So this week, I encourage you to take some time to gain some soul awareness. Is your soul healthy? Is your soul fatigued? And then map out a plan. What is a step that you can take to start working in and aligning your soul with the rhythm of Jesus? So would you pray with me? God, we just thank you for your unanxious presence. We thank you for your peace. We thank you that you are unwavering. And Lord, I just pray that as we are trying to gain some awareness on the state of our souls, that you would open our eyes to the parts of us that you want to work on, to the parts of us that you want to grow, that you want to align with your rhythm. God, I pray that our roots would grow deep. I pray that this would be a community where love would flow out of us from such a deep, deep place because we have healthy souls that are aligned with you. And I pray that that would bleed into all of our relationships and that there would be strength and health that would come out of that. Lord, I pray for the people that are in the heat of the year or in the season of drought, God. I pray that they would feel restored by you, that they would feel your true rest, and that they would feel what it's like to be in the easy yoke that you're carrying alongside of us. So God, I just pray over this community. I pray over what you're doing in each individual heart and life. And God, we are just asking for transformation. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks so much for being with us this morning, and I'm going to hand it back to Sarah, who is going to give you a few last little bits of info, and we will see you next week for part 3 of Stronger.